Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is a rebroadcast of the Brian Lehrer Show's 20th anniversary program from our Jerome L. Green Performance Space on September 25th. From the Jerome L. Green Performance Space here at WNYC, Brian Lehrer with you. Thanks a lot for listening today. And to some of you, thanks a lot for listening for the last 20 years. This program debuted on September 25th, 1989. So today marks the exact 20th anniversary. And we thought that to have some fun with the occasion and take a little stock of how the world has changed in the last couple of decades, we would do a 20-year news and history quiz for this hour of the show, and we thought how better than to gather some other 20-year-olds in the room with us and see what they think and test what they know about the world their parents are leaving them. Our other audience members here, some of whom I would say are over 21, can play too, and we will take some contestants on the phone. So call in if you want to be in our 20-year news and history quiz. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And the simple rule is, if you get two in a row right, we'll give you a WNYC t-shirt or a WNYC umbrella, plus, of course, the ever-valuable bragging rights for the rest of the year that you're a Brian Lehrer Show News and History Scholar. And listeners, as always, when we're in the green space, you can also watch our show today via live streaming video at WNYC.org. Go to WNYC.org right now if you want to watch today's program as well as listen. We will have some guest quiz masters along the way this hour, beginning with, right now, WNYC President Laura Walker for two kind of preamble questions before we get to the news of each year. Hi, Laura. Thanks for being here and thanks
Thank
for everything.
You. Oh, it's my honor to be here. And happy 20th, Brian. You are just doing such important work and have for the last 20 years, you and your extraordinary team. And it is why Time Magazine called your show Dialogue, Not Diatribe, and why the Peabody Award judges called your show Radio That Builds Community Rather Than Divides. It's more important than ever before.
And thank you for saying
happy
so.
Happy 20th.
And I also want to thank... And I also want to thank some of your predecessors. The late WNYC President Mary Nichols yes. hired me, along with the Vice President for Programming, Doug O'Brien, and Program Director Larry Orfele in 1989, and I remain forever grateful to all of them for giving me the chance. So, start
I
with
have
you.
The have first question. Okay. Brian's show debuted on September 25th, 1989, you know that. But what you may not know is he first hosted on the station on May 1st of that year. What show was it and why?
Any hands? What show was it and why? Since we have no hands here, let's see if I can go to a caller. All right, this is really inside baseball. Any of those callers think you've been listening all this time and have any idea? Let's go to line one, Matt in Bergenfield. Matt, sorry you get this one, but what was the first time I hosted on the station?
First person, Don Mattingly?
What?
Don Mattingly?
Don Mattingly is wrong. A non sequitur is always good once in a while just to kind of break things up. Okay, the answer is that...
Brian debuted on New York and Company, hosted by none other than Leonard Lopate, who was on jury duty that day. And the station was using it as an opportunity to audition Brian for a new show they were developing.
That's right. There were actually two of us who hosted that week who were finalists for this job, and I was lucky enough to get it. Go ahead.
And actually the program debuted on not on FM, but on AM, and you think you know the number. What was it, 820? No, it was 8:30 a.m., and it was originally from 10 to 1.
It was a big thing. That's right. We were 3 hours with one producer, and, you know, we were all almost dead by the end of the first 9 months. And we sanity yes. reigned, and we became a 10 a.m. to noon show. And the very first segment of the show was a foreign policy debate between a liberal think tank fellow named Gregory Treverton and a neoconservative one. The neocon you may know because he much later became very well known for his role in promoting the Iraq War, and his nickname is the Prince of Darkness. Who's that? Not Wolfowitz. Not Robert Nobeck, who also has that same nickname. I guess conservative America is big enough for two princes of darkness. But the answer is Richard Pearl. So, okay, one more, Laura.
Okay, quick. Brian Lehrer's show began with another name. What was the show called for the first dozen years on the air?
A lot of people know that. Yes, Larry Josephson?
On the line.
You got it.
On the line.
And do you know when it changed to the Brian Lehrer show? September 2001, right after 9/11.
That's right, because that was when we first went on FM for the emergency, and it wasn't my show that day in any meaningful sense of that term. It was, here we are all together talking about and covering what's going on in our world. And I didn't say the name of a show. I said, just like I do to this day, Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And here we all are, and that began on September 11th, and we dropped the name. We have a piece of, we have, now let's see, we have some historical, okay. Oh, in case, for those of you who never heard the term on the line, listen to this. This is Brian Lehrer. Tomorrow we'll have a special edition of On the Line. With 6 days to go before the election, we'll take a one-hour look at Bill Clinton's record as president, followed by a one-hour look at Bob Dole's record in the Senate. No personal attacks, no posturing on the issues, just an in-depth look at what each man has actually done in Washington. That's On the Line tomorrow morning from 10 a.m. to noon on WNYC AM 820, news and talk around the clock. A retired slogan, news and talk around the clock, and the show was on the line. But I guess we were doing basically the same thing that we were doing. We were looking at the Clinton-Dole presidential race as the issues rather than the personal attack.
That's right.
WNYC President Laura Walker, thanks for getting us going today.
Thank you.
And that was kind of the preamble to our 20-year news and history quiz. Now we're going to go one question a year, and we're going to try to go through this real fast with our other guest quiz masters, because then we want to actually have a discussion among some of you about sort of the big sweep of history over these last 20 years. And our next two quiz masters also had significant events in 1989. Chicago Tribune columnist Clarence Page joins us from Chicago now. He won the Pulitzer Prize for commentary in 1989. Hi, Clarence.
Happy anniversary there, Brian.
Thank you very much. Happy anniversary to you.
Go ahead and
ask your first question, then we'll talk briefly about what a momentous year 1989 actually was.
Okay. You want to hear my question now?
Yes.
Okay. In 1989, 6 weeks after the show debuted, one of the most memorable events of the 20th century took place. This event symbolically ended the world order of the previous 40 years. What happened?
For those of you who couldn't hear in the room, in 1989, 6 weeks after the show debuted, one of the most memorable events of the 20th century took place, symbolically ending the world order of the previous 40 years. Ma'am, what happened?
The Berlin Wall came down.
The Berlin Wall came down. Applaud if you did not know that. Applaud if you're lying by not applauding. Okay, so that's one. And you know, Clarence, 1989 had that. It had the fall of communism, which by itself was epical. But
that's
Tiananmen
right.
Square in China, the Exxon Valdez oil spill, New York City elected its first African-American mayor. The Ayatollah Khomeini placed the death fatwa on Salman Rushdie's head. I mean, that was quite a year in the world, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And that while the Tiananmen Square was going on, my son was being born. Leave it to my kid to get born on a heavy news day.
And one of the threads we're going to follow here, starting with this very next question, is that it seems like almost all of the big events over the last 20 years took place when I was on vacation.
Why does that happen?
So starting with 1990, you're going to hear this thread pop up in these questions. Clarence, go for question number two.
Well, in accordance with that, in 1990, while Brian was on vacation, ladies and gentlemen, one country did something to another country that would come to dominate U.S. foreign policy for basically the next 20 years. Now, who did what to whom?
Who in this room wants to answer who? Oh, no, I'm sorry. We stay with you to see if you win a WNYC gift. So you got the Berlin Wall right. Who did what to whom in 1990? that basically came to dominate U.S. foreign policy for the next 20 years.
A hint?
No. This is too big for a hint.
I don't know
okay.
This one.
Okay, thank you for trying. And you know what? Let's go to a caller. So I think our next caller is Jacob in Levittown. Can we put Jacob on? Jacob,
yeah,
who did what to whom in 1990 to set up the New World Order?
No hint.
Sorry, Jacob.
Okay. I have no
idea. Thanks for trying. Anyone else? Okay, we have a hand over here.
Iraq invaded Kuwait.
Iraq invaded Kuwait. And, of course, it's the
first round of applause
I've ever heard for Iraq invading Kuwait. And, of course, the U.S. led a coalition to war under the first President Bush, which came to be known as the Gulf War and later the First Gulf War. And it really established Saddam Hussein as our basic enemy and, you know, Clarence, what President Bush, the first President Bush, called the New World Order right after the old World Order had collapsed in 1989. And who thought it would take place in that negative a way that quickly, right?
That's right. And how many world orders have we had since then? Now I've kind of lost count.
Well, you know, I would tend to say the fall of communism, 9/11, and the advent of the Internet are maybe the most earth-changing things that have happened in my 20 years. And I would add as a trend something we were talking about with Michael Moore in the first hour, the decline of the middle class and the rise of what Anya Kamenetz calls generation debt. You know, probably a lot of the 20-year-olds in the audience and maybe even a lot of baby boomers by now are the first generation of Americans not expected to live better than our parents did financially. So for boomers and Gen X and Gen Y, I would say those four things may be the kind of, you know, the pillars of the world that we live in the last 20 years. Would you take any stab at events or trends of the last 20 years that might be the big three?
Well, I think your list is a very good one. One other that comes to mind, speaking of generations, is that we've seen the rise of what I call the late boomers, those born between 1955 and 65, who are too young to remember the 1960s except as kind of background noise to their young lives. And this generation has the distinction of including both Barack Obama and Sarah Palin.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Who just yesterday was telling an audience in Hong Kong that the Obama plan does include death panels.
That's right.
In 1990. Okay, Clarence, one more.
For the next 20 years.
Do your third question.
Okay, my next one here is am I going out on this one anyway?
Yes, you're going out on 1991, I think, right?
Well, we will see. Anyway, in 1991, Americans held their noses as the words long dong silver and high-tech lynching entered the national political discourse. What in the world was going on, ladies and gentlemen?
What in the world was going on? High-tech lynching and long dong silver. Oh, you got the one right. That's right. Iraq invaded Kuwait and?
Confirmation hearings for Clarence Thomas.
That's right. And it was with... Give her a round of applause. So you get to choose a WNYC T-shirt or a WNYC umbrella. Thank you very much for playing. Oh, or a Green Space T-shirt. There's a third. I would choose the Green Space T-shirt if I were you. But they're really cool. They're really cool. All right, Clarence Page, thank you so much, and congratulations on your 20th anniversary of winning the Pulitzer Prize for commentary.
And the same to you. The difference between your anniversary and mine is nobody asks you, what have you done lately?
Ouch. Hey, I don't ask you that. We had you on
thank you so many times, Brian.
Over the last year. Clarence Page, thanks a lot for joining us again. And we're going to go on to our next quizmaster now. And that is someone else who had a very significant event in 1989, the actress Rosie Perez. She really broke out as being one of the stars of Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing. Hey, Rosie.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. Where are you today?
I'm on the West Coast right now. I'm in Los Angeles, unfortunately. Sorry for the people from Los Angeles who are listening, but, you know, New York is my heart.
Unfortunately, in Los Angeles, yes, but Rosie's a New Yorker. So you have a West Coast question for 1992, right?
Yes. Yes, I do. So here's the West Coast question for 1992. A not guilty verdict of a very high-profile case sparked fierce rioting for 6 days here in Los Angeles. What was the case about?
Fierce rioting in 1992 out there in L.A. What was the case about? Do we have a hand? Bring the microphone over to anyone with a hand up right over there. Let's do it real quick because we want this to move along.
It was about the police beating of Rodney King.
It absolutely was. Listen to this.
People, I just want to say, you know, can we all get along? Can we get along? It's not going to change anything. We'll get our justice. They've won the battle, but they haven't won the war.
A shaken Rodney King a few days later trying to get the rioting to stop himself, even though on some level it was on his behalf. Rosie, next question.
In 1993, while Bryant was on vacation, the Clinton administration staged a military-style assault resulting in 76 deaths at the end of a 51-day siege. What did the government assault and why?
What did the government assault in 1993? Any idea?
No.
No. Are you with the college?
I am. I'm with Barnard.
You're with Barnard. And they didn't teach you about the hand over here?
The assault on the Camp Davidian compound in Waco, Texas.
The Branch Davidian compound. That's right, where David Koresh and his followers in that sect or cult, if you want to call it that, were holed up for 51 days. They had stockpiled weapons of their own, but right and left alike were outraged when the Clinton administration took that act. What they said they were doing was trying to save children in there who they felt were endangered. Okay, Rosa, you have one more, right?
Yes, I have one more. And congratulations on 20 years. I want to get that in. And you have the best theme music ever. All right. In 1994, African politics took a leap forward. One country did something that it would take the USA another 14 years to do so. So which African country made global news with a historic election?
All right. You knew Waco. Do you know the 1994 historic leap in Africa, making global news with a historic election, something that it took the United States another 14 years to accomplish?
Election of Nelson Mandela as the president of South Africa.
That is correct. The first black president of South Africa. Now, are you also here with the college?
I just finished at a CUNY graduate school of journalism.
All right. A well-educated CUNY J school grad. And Rosie, congratulations on 20 years since Do the Right Thing.
Thank you.
Oh, you're here, and you're still here for one more question? No.
Oh.
Okay, no, it is time to say goodbye to you. Thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate that you were a part of this with us today.
It was an honor, and congratulations again.
And I have the next question. In 1995, Middle America was the scene of what was up until then the worst act of terrorism on U.S. soil, killing 168 and injuring over 600. What happened in 1995? Let's get a microphone over to somebody, I guess, over on that side. Since, by the way, that other, our other contestant from the CUNY grad school won a WNYC prize. So let's give her a round of applause. Now, to that 95 question, go ahead.
As the bombing of the Alfred Murrah Building in Oklahoma City.
In Oklahoma City by Timothy McVeigh. Quick follow-up. We'll give you the prize if you get the follow-up. He was motivated by anger about another event. What was it? That took place on the same day of the year, April 19th.
Oh, it was...
In a different year.
There was a compound that was raided in Montana, I believe. I don't remember the guy's name.
Well, that too, I think we may have to look this up and give you a T-shirt later. But he was angry about Waco. The very thing we talked about happened on the same day, April 19th, and Timothy McVeigh used that day as retribution. Okay, I'll tell you what, if you can get the 1996 question, you'll win the WNYC prize regardless of what our research finds. And we have as our next quizmaster the Village Voice columnist Wayne Barrett, who, if I'm not mistaken, just celebrated his 30th year writing his column for The Voice. Right, Wayne?
Yes, it's 31 now, Brian. But yes, who's counting?
Who's counting? All right, and you have a 1996 question that's a little out of your usual bailiwick, don't you?
Yes, especially a Yankee hater that I am. But in 1996, a New York drought broke, an 18-year sports drought, to be exact. What sent New Yorkers into the streets cheering on a late October night?
The Yankees won the World Series.
The Yankees won the World Series.
That was easy.
And he gave it away, you know,
really
in the question.
So can I get the 97 question, too? I mean, that's...
Well, between the half right on the last one and the giveaway. All right, the follow-up question. Who was the World Series MVP for the Yankees in that World Series?
In 96, that was Derek Jeter.
It was not.
Oh.
But this guy gets an E for effort and should get a WNYC prize anyway. Thank you very much. It was John Wetland who was their closer just before Mariano Rivera. All right, Wayne, on to 97.
And I'll try not to tip this one off. Sorry.
Yeah, and don't forget,
that.
It's 97 one. You know, I was on vacation.
Yes, congratulations on 20 years of vacations. On the night of August 9th, 1997, an incident occurred in East Flatbush, Brooklyn that further strained Mayor Giuliani's relationship with the black community. It had to do with the police. What was it?
Okay, where's our contestant for this? Somebody's raising a hand right over there.
Sir. Is it Abner Louima?
It was. The beating and sodomizing of Abner Louima. And the event led to the largest police brutality court settlement in the city's history, $8.7 million. Okay, Wayne, you have another question?
Yes, now this one does fit into the long list of big news that happened while you were on vacation, Brian, which, by the way, were always the best shows. In 1998...
Andrea Bernstein, thanks here. And Amy Eddings.
In 1998, Americans first became acquainted with the name Osama bin Laden. What was the incident, technically two incidents, that put him on the FBI's most wanted list for the first time?
The embassy bombings in Kenya and Tanzania.
That is it. And this man wins a WNYC prize. I'll ask the bonus question. That wasn't enough for 1 2-week vacation. Because in that same 2-week span, somebody testified before a grand jury in the United States and said, I know that my public comments and my silence about this matter gave a false impression. I misled people, including even my wife. I deeply regret that.
Bill Clinton's mea culpa?
That was a good wild guess, and of course it is correct. All right. Let's see. Do we have one more Wayne question?
We do. In 1999, global financial markets and thousands of vending machines shared a common, if minor, challenge. What international economic change was behind it?
All right, next person with a hand up. People get to say they know the answer to the first question, then we throw a second one at them.
Hi. Y2K?
It was not Y2K, which technically took place in 2000. Anyway, we have a hand back there. No? How about right down here, if nobody else? Yes, right down in the front.
I think it was the introduction of the euro.
It absolutely was the introduction of the euro, which took effect on New Year's Day. Today, by the way, 1 euro is worth $1.50 or so. It was introduced as a 1-to-1 ratio with the dollar. So, Wayne?
You've done the best 20 years of radio in New York, Brian.
You're very kind to say it. Keep writing. Thank you very much. Wayne Barrett, Village Voice columnist, one of our guest quiz masters in our 20-year news and history quiz. And we're going to keep this contestant with us over a break. Now I feel like we're on a real quiz show on television. We're going to come back, but this is where we're breaking after 1999. So we'll continue in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC from our Jerome L. Green Performance Space. This is On the Line. I'm Brian Lehrer. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, not on the line, from the Jerome L. Green Performance Space. No longer on the line. You just heard a sampling of three of the various pieces of theme music that we've used over the years on this show as we mark our 20th anniversary today with a 20-year news and history quiz. We will be doing a few 20th anniversary programs, by the way, between now and November 9th on Issues. November 9th because it's the anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. That's how we knew the show was really having an impact. Within 6 weeks of starting, the Berlin Wall fell. And I thought, hey, we must be doing something right. But let's continue with our news quiz, and I want to introduce our next quizmaster here in the green space with us, a favorite of many public radio listeners, and the author most recently of The Wordy Shipmates, Sarah Vowell.
Hi.
And we're up to 2000, Sarah.
Hooray.
New millennium.
Yeah.
Brian Lehrer Show now
I've
in its second millennium.
I've lived through most of it.
And go ahead.
In 2000, while Brian was on vacation, the Clinton administration staged a raid on a private home in Miami to seize a child and send him to another country, ending a saga that had dominated news coverage in both nations for the first few months of the new millennium. What was this raid on a private home?
All right, our contestant got one right before the break. If she gets another one, she wins a WNYC prize.
I don't remember his name, but they were sending him back to Cuba, as I recall.
I would say...
Would we accept that?
Maybe. Why were they sending him back to Cuba? What was the situation?
Well, I think he'd come in from Cuba, and he was young, and he shouldn't have been here. He was living with relatives here, not his parents.
He was living with relatives and not his parents. His name was Elian Gonzalez, and we will accept that answer because you remember the story. And she gets a WNYC Green Space T-shirt, umbrella, or other kind of T-shirt. All right. Next contestant, let's take our next contestant on the phone, Peter in Sunset Park. Hey, Peter, thanks for calling in.
Hi, how you doing, Brian?
Doing
Happy
great.
Anniversary.
Thank
I've
you very much.
I've been listening for 20 years.
You've been listening for 20 years?
I have, yes.
That's amazing. I wish we could have given you the first question.
I didn't get that either, so I'm glad I didn't get it.
All right, on to 2001, and of course we know something that happened in 2001.
Peter, in 2001, the biggest event of the year was, of course, the attacks on September 11th. After the attacks, New Yorkers rallied together. For instance, the famous Milton Glaser I Heart NY logo got a redesign. It showed up as a poster in windows and storefronts across the city as a sign of our resilience. What was new about the logo?
Okay, so it was a redesign of the I Heart New York logo?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. To help bring people together after 9/11. Help show solidarity with New York.
Did it have a picture of the Trade Towers incorporated into it?
It did not. Thank you very much for trying, Peter.
God, I'm so embarrassed.
Thanks so much. Humiliation for the rest of his life. Anybody here
know
it?
And the terrorists win. No.
Ma'am?
Oh, okay. Hi. It said, I heart New York more than ever, and it had the little, like, brown colored patch at the bottom of the heart.
It had a little?
Smudge.
Piece of the heart. Yeah, smudge. I don't know if I'd call it a smudge. Would you call it a smudge? Do you know what we're talking about?
The things your producer calls it a smudge.
Calls it a
yes.
smudge? Okay. Well, if my producer says it, it must be right. I've learned that lesson over the years. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of it a little bite taken out. But okay, we'll go with smudge. All right, next question.
In 2002, the Catholic Church had a bad year. the Renaissance was over. A series of newspaper articles in March revealed what?
Child molestation?
Is right. Thank you very much. Two in a row. decades that the church, and in more detail, the church had been covering up decades of sexual misconduct by priests, and it was broken by the Boston Globe. Sarah, let's go on to 2003. Next contestant.
In 2003, Brian was once again on summer vacation. You're like the George Bush of public radio.
Except I only went
the man
on
who
the few
had
weeks
a took
that
break,
I got.
Thank goodness. Let's see. Brian was once again on summer vacation in 2003 during an important event. Something happened that directly affected all New Yorkers and that had only happened twice before, in 1965 and 1977. Hint. News of this event was available on the radio.
With a blackout.
But not TV. That's right.
It's also difficult for us to get some information to you. We're relying on telephone service right now. The Associated Press wire system, again, is not working. We are currently working on backup emergency power in order to bring you this broadcast.
WNYC's Richard Hake at the time during the blackout. Sarah, next question.
In 2004, once again while Brian was on vacation, a local politician suddenly and shockingly resigned, making headlines nationwide. Who resigned and why?
Oh, he said he's gay, the governor of New Jersey.
You got the name?
Yeah, the name.
Well, we'll give you a little clue.
And so my truth is that I am a gay American. It makes little difference that as governor, I am gay. In fact, having the ability to truthfully set forth my identity might have enabled me to be more forthright in fulfilling and discharging my constitutional obligations.
Can you get the name?
I can't recall now.
Well,
sorry.
You got it right. We're going to give you a prize. But that was Governor
Jim McGreevy.
All right. That's two in a row, right? Thank you very much for playing. Next contestant is on the phone. Let's go to Paul in the Bronx. Paul, can you hear me? Paul, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. We got you. Sarah Vowell, what's the question for Paul?
In 2005, for just a few days, taxi cabs were permitted to pick up multiple fares according to a new fee structure. Why was that?
A hint, it's the same reason that many New Yorkers hitchhiked for the first time ever.
Man, I forget this. I blank.
Okay, sorry.
I have one of those posters in my office, the I Love New York More Than Ever.
Is it a smudge or a bite?
It looks like a smudge to me.
Smudge, okay. Producers are always right. Thank you for trying. Let's go to somebody here who knows that. Who do we have? Right back there. Hi.
The MTA went on strike.
That's right.
Yeah, they did.
Sarah? 2006.
2006, a beloved, if often parodied television personality met his tragic end while filming a show underwater. Who was he?
That was Steve Irwin.
Very good. Yep. What was he doing?
He was doing a show with his daughter, Bindi, about Steve Irwin.
You know
Ray's.
His daughter's name?
She has a show now, too, on Animal Planet. It's a big deal. Yeah, and he was filming it.
She works more than you, Brian. No.
Apparently.
Yeah.
That's right. Let's listen. 2006.
It was so ballistic, it was launching itself out of the tree, trying to sink its fangs into me. Crikey, it was dangerous. Really dangerous. I was just flat out keeping out of its way. Woo!
That was Steve Irwin in his life, also known as the Crocodile Hunter, and he did, in fact, meet his demise when working with these underwater creatures. Please thank Sarah Vowell.
Thanks. Happy anniversary, Brian.
Thanks, Sarah. Thanks for coming in. And our final guest quizmaster is my namesake, Jim Lehrer, host of the PBS NewsHour with Jim Lehrer. And Jim and I are not related. And Jim, do you remember the time that you were nice enough to come on with us when the show was really new and people had kept asking me, oh, are you related to Jim Lehrer? And you came on and you traced your roots for us just to prove to the listeners once and for all that we did not share a common family.
I do remember it, every minute of it.
So
and
you...
I don't, but I didn't do it as a way of, it was not a pejorative disassociation. I mean, I am delighted to have the same last name as you have, Brian. And I triumph because, I trumpet that. And it is a great pleasure. And the fact that I was born in Kansas and grew up in Texas and you didn't is your problem, not mine.
It did occur to me when McNeil retired, considering what I do for a living, that I might apply for the opening. And then I thought, you know, it'll never work.
You know, Brian, as coincidence would have, and we haven't talked about that, I gave a serious thought to that myself, thinking, you know, the Lara Lara report or the Lara Lara news hour. But then the problem came because not everybody pronounces your last name and my last name the same way. So it wouldn't work. Say you could have, it would be the Lara and Lair news hour or the Lara and Lear news hour. I don't know what your problem was, but my problem was my mother pronounced our last name one way, my father pronounced it another, and my older brother pronounced it a third way. So it wasn't going to work. It wasn't anything about you, Brian. It was just the name thing wasn't going to work.
I thought it was that, yeah. Okay,
yeah,
you
yeah,
have a 2007 yeah. question, Jim. Go ahead.
Got it. In 2007, what event put Blacksburg, Virginia at the center of the media world and later caused many politicians to examine mental health policies and gun laws?
2007 in Blacksburg,
right.
Virginia, ma'am.
The Virginia Tech shooting.
Yes, it was. Though
That's right.
Though not much, if anything, changed. Jim, go to 2008.
All right. Our current financial crisis started in 2008. There were more than a few newsworthy bankruptcies. Here are four companies, all more than 60 years old, that filed Chapter 11 in 2008. Which of them had the most employees, more than 30,000? Multiple choice. Was it Lehman Brothers, Circuit City, Bear Stearns, or the Tribune Company, owners of New York Newsday and a dozens of other newspaper and TV stations?
Which of those companies, and we've heard so much about the banks and the media going down, which of those companies had the most employees? Who do you think? Lehman Brothers, Circuit City, Bear Stearns, or Tribune Company?
Circuit City, because they're the one that, well.
Because why?
Because they're out of business.
Because they're out of business.
Again.
And it was Circuit City.
Oh.
And it.
Hey,
and
hey.
You win our last WNYC prize in our 20-year news and history quiz. And, you know, we think of these giants, Lehman Brothers, Tribune Company, Bear Stearns. Lehman had 26,000. I don't know where those people are today, but Circuit City had more than 30,000 employees around the country. 13,000 at Bear Stearns, 20,000 at Newsday. Jim, last question. It's from this year.
Okay. This year, 2009, what Bronx native gave pride to Latinos nationwide with her achievement culminating on August 6th, 2009.
Easy peasy.
Easy.
All right. Who we got? We have Art, someone right back here. Tala, can you bring the microphone right over there? Hi.
The nomination of Sonia Sotomayor.
Keep going.
The first Latino American.
Not only the nomination, but...
She got the Supreme Court Justice
right.
Chair.
Thank you very much. That is right. Well, 20 years of news and history, and we're going to come back in a minute and talk about it among all of us here at the Green Space. Jim Lehrer, continued success on the Great News Hour on PBS. Thank you very much for sharing my name.
Hey, same to you, Brian, and congratulations on 20 years.